This episode of the Squawker Talker podcast is brought to you by PlayZoola, a new way to bet on football based on judgment rather than odds. Use your knowledge to make predictions and win cash by beating other players and climbing the leaderboard. Sign up now and receive an instant £5 bonus on your first deposit of £5. Link is in the description of this podcast, or you can visit po.st/playzoolapod. That's po.st/playzoolapod. Now, on to the Squawker Talker. Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome back to the Squawker Talker. My name is Nick English. Joining me today to pick apart a very busy weekend of Premier League action and looking ahead to the Champions League is Greg Johnson. Hello, Greg.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
About us all. Also joining me is we've got two Gregs. We're a Gregs. We're now in honour of our pasty loving.
There's not enough pastries in this room, though.
Gregs don't sponsor this pod either, so I should stop saying it. Greg Lee's here. He's a freelancer for The National and other places. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Nick.
How's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. My hay fever's kicked in today, so
Oh, no.
Slight negative, but apart from that, all good.
If anyone hears any sneezing in the background, it's
probably me.
Yeah, probably you. Okay, well, it's a fairly self-contained room, so we should be okay. Let's talk Premier League. Yesterday, Sunderland lost 3-0 to Man United, a totally unsurprising result, Mr. Johnson. But they looked plucky for the first sort of half hour, and then Zlatan pulled an absolute worldie, and Sebastian Larsson decided that a studs-up challenge would be a good idea. Actually, he did two in a row.
Mm. It was very Steven Gerrard, actually, when he got sent off against United.
It was very Steven Gerrard.
He went in for the high and then went in for the man.
Sunderland just sort of completely fell away after that in the form of a team that's really just decided that they're going down.
Well, did they fall away or did United just start slowly? Because Zlatan scored that wonderful goal, but he's kind of picked up the same knack that Wayne Rooney used to have in that he scores great goals when he's playing really poor. Mm. Like, United just didn't really get a grip of the game until that. Mm. And obviously, even when he's playing not his best, Zlatan tends to come up with these moments that puts his team on the right track. So, yeah, I don't buy the hype of those first 20 minutes.
You don't buy the hype.
They're a dreadful team who are going to the Championship where they deserve to be, unfortunately.
Yeah, they deserve to be there for about four seasons. Greg, Zlatan scored 232 career goals before turning 30. Now he's scored 250 since, which is quite surprising. He's been involved in 47.8 of United's 46 goals this season now. Quite the record, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing for that's those statistics since turning 30. That's kind of the age where a lot of people look at players and think that that's when the downturn starts, but it's obviously not happened for him. I think the percentage of goals he has scored for United maybe is something they need to kind of look at in a way. It's obviously no harm if he's scoring them, but you would hope for others to chip in a little bit more. Mm. I think a lot of their play does revolve around Ibrahimovic, and at times they can maybe be a bit one-dimensional. Mm. I think in the Everton game before this, we saw the second half when they were trying to get back to level, it was very much trying to feed him, and if he doesn't score often, they do struggle to break teams down. But amazing record, and he's proven anyone who doubted him last summer when United signed him on.
It's quite interesting. There's parallels between what happened with Ruud van Nistelrooy when he was the main striker at Man United. He was another striker who scored loads of goals, but he kind of made them a little bit one-dimensional away because all the play went to him. He was everything and all things to attack.
All geared around him.
Exactly. But Ibrahimovic, it's a trickier puzzle to solve, really, because only Paul Pogba has made and completed more through balls for Man United this season than Zlatan Ibrahimovic. So he's not just a goal scorer. He does do a bit more. Mm. And I mean, it is simple to say that, it's Zlatan, the two reliant on him, but maybe the fact is United just aren't good enough to not be reliant on him. Maybe if the team were better, then he would be a part of it rather than the sole apex of everything they do.
Are the team that bad?
Well, I mean, I don't...
They look like...
Whenever we're critical of Jose Mourinho, there's obviously a flashback going, you're always too critical of him. But there is an element that United, they only really started playing their best players about a further way through the season. It just... I kind of feel like if Mourinho would have kind of... He had this dossier, didn't he, when he said he gave to the Glazers and Ed Woodward before he even got the job, saying, this is how I'm going to fix Man United. Well, it took him so long to get a grip of what he wanted to do that I've kind of wondered what was in that dossier. If he would have got the team he wanted in the state he wanted it and played it more often to get the chemistry and rhythm he needs to get going, yeah. Because he's not an attacking coach. He sets up the team to defend and then relies on individual quality to break forward and destroy defences. If he would have played his best team for earlier and got the rhythm going, maybe we would see a team less reliant on one man up front to score the goals.
Yeah, I mean, there seemed to be a period, Greg, in the middle of the season where United were playing loads of really good attacking football. They looked really dynamic. Now they seem to be locked in a battle not to finish sixth with Arsenal, which seems to have become the biggest insult in English football. Do you see them sort of sneaking back into the top four or not really?
I think it will be difficult. I know they've still got a game in hand on City and some of the sides above them, but with the Europa League coming as well, that's at least two more games coming up. They've got the Manchester Derby midweek as well, so it's a very hectic schedule, and unless they can stop drawing the home games, then obviously that's going to be detrimental to their chance of breaking in. You can't rule them out yet, but I still think they're outsiders.
And quickly, Sunderland game over. That was it.
Yeah, that's now 10 of their last 11 games in all competitions they've failed to score Sunderland, which is not good at all. The only exception being 4-0 at Palace. So it seems like they used up all their goals in that game, unfortunately, for them.
When one of your best players is doing silly things like studs up challenges, you know, seems to be a bad...
Jermaine Defoe got sent off, what?
Stoke 1, Liverpool 2, huge result for Liverpool this. Amusing stat from the game is Roberto Firmino, who celebrated his second goal with a quite magnificent shirt off display, has now been booked for excessive celebration more often than any other player in Europe's top five leagues since 2012-13. That's seven times. Does this change the mood around sort of Liverpool's top four challenge? This feels like quite a big sort of mental hurdle that they overcame, Greg.
What, taking his top off?
No.
Oh, right, sorry.
Coming from a goal down, beating a side like Stoke, who, you know, the notoriously struggled against.
They're so unpredictable, Stoke. I mean, you look at their form before the game, and it looked like they were going to do anything, but look at the players they've got. They're so changeable in their form and their mood. You could just tell something's going to happen against Liverpool. Liverpool seems to be a team that will unfortunately always find another side just when they're about to come good, it seems.
Klopp named an incredibly weak starting 11.
Yeah, it's bizarre. But at the same time, I mean, apparently Firmino and Coutinho weren't quite right to start the game together. So, I mean, he had to reshuffle his pack. But without Sadio Mane, we just know at Liverpool aren't the same side. So to see the other kind of match winner step up in the Senegalese forwards' absence is massive for them. But it still remains to be seen whether they can kind of keep this going, because it looks a little bit patchwork and kind of, a bit ad hoc at the moment. As in, you know what Liverpool's system should be. Without it, they look a little bit lost.
It is patchwork, and it is sort of scraping by sometimes. But with Philippe Coutinho in such good form, Greg, there always seems to be a chance that they can just pull goals out of nowhere, because his finishing is unbelievable when he's on song.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't almost matter if they're patchwork until the end of the season if they keep getting results like this. If they can grind out enough wins. They haven't got the games in hand that others do, but they have got points in the bag, which you'd probably rather have at this stage of the season.
And they've only got the Premier League to focus on, crucially.
Exactly, yeah. And they have struggled in the games they've got to come. The type of fixtures, obviously, it's well documented how they do struggle against, say, the lower half teams. But their running is definitely favourable. So if they can, like you say, just win games by an odd goal, thanks to a piece of brilliance from Coutinho, that'll be enough for them.
The lineup might have been a bit weird, but this is kind of what Klopp needs to do now, I think. We've seen this 4-3-3, as I said, doesn't work as well without Mane, so he has to think of new ideas to see Liverpool over the line. I don't think they're going to drop out of the top four. I think they've got enough about them.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, he tried this back three at one point, didn't he, since Mane's been out. And you look at a player like Alberto Moreno, who hasn't really had much of a role to play. You stick him as a flying left wing back, maybe that can add the proportion they need to kind of hurt small teams before the end of the season. So I don't think it's...
as a distraction.
Yeah. Yeah,
shock of blonde hair just overlapping you. What's going on?
A decoy. Yeah. A decoy. Maybe that's an inverted decoy, medio trequartista or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Something like that. Won't get into that.
I feel ill. Stoke under Mark Hughes, obviously better to look at than Tony Pulis's Stoke, but they were known for getting the odd scalp. Their record against the sort of top six, the sort of big six teams this season, has been absolutely woeful, and it seems to be... They just seem to be sort of just stuck there. They are the definition of mid-table at the moment, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And that cliche needs amending now, doesn't it? About the tough trip to the Bet365 as it is now, because it's not really for the bid teams, as you say. I think 2015 is the last time they actually beat one of them. So it's not even just this season. It's the second half of last year as well. And yeah, three consecutive ninth place finishes. They'll probably be there or thereabouts again this year. And I do have a bit of sympathy with them, because what more can they do, really? Especially now we see the big six. We see Everton, who are probably going to be seventh, nailed on most years. So there's not much more they can actually do. Mm. But I wonder whether just the repetitiveness of the current kind of cycle they're in will maybe lead to Hughes coming under more pressure than the finishers would suggest.
Yeah, interesting. Let's talk about Spurs. 4-0 versus Watford. Wow. I mean, and Dele Alli, wow. Here's a talent. 10-plus goals in his last three league seasons. He's got more league goals this season than Griezmann, Hazard, Mane, Neymar. He's the first midfielder in the Premier League this season to be directly involved in 20 goals. Is he Lampard? Is he Gerrard? Is he both? I mean, I don't know. I can't remember ever seeing a player like Dele Alli, a 6'2" playmaker who's fantastic on the ball and makes clever. He's very unique as a player, isn't he?
Mm, he's very modern as well. Like, I think the thing that strikes me about Dele Alli is what he does off the ball. Mm. Like, his movement is ridiculous. The runs he makes, the runs that he points at other people to make, that's what's amazing. If you actually look at him on the ball, like, some people say are critical of him because he's not, like, he isn't the most imaginative passer of the ball. Mm. And some of his on the ball stuff isn't as a, it's good, don't get me wrong, it's good, but it's not great. What really sets him apart is his intelligence when he's not on the ball. And they play in that kind of in-between role as a kind of forward come midfielder in this like kind of space that Poch likes to put him in now, Pochettino. It brings out all his best qualities. Like, he's literally got everything. He's got every single attribute you could want. And if he stays at Spurs and he stays under a manager like Pochettino, he's going to go right to the very top.
Greg, I mean, he's 20 years old. That's kind of the scary thing about it. Should we be more excited about Dele Alli than Harry Kane? Harry Kane he just looks to be some sort of machine. But Dele Alli, really something quite special, obviously.
Yeah, I think he probably is the more exciting of the two, partly because of his age. He's 20, as you say, 3 years younger than Kane, 4 years younger than Kane, I think.
That's absurd.
A few years younger than Kane.
Yeah.
Both very, very exciting talents. But yeah, I think Alli, he still maybe has another level he can go to because of his age, and what he's achieved so far is enough. If he kind of stayed as he is now, he'd be an amazing player. Kind of, you think that Tottenham may at some point struggle to keep him given the trajectory he's on at the moment. But
he's drawing a lot of comparisons with Lampard and Gerrard. Do you think those are too fanciful, or do you think those are realistic if he stays on the same trajectory?
Yeah, I think they're realistic. You never know, things can happen, the injuries or off-field issues, as well as kind of just maybe players don't always develop at the same rate. So I think sometimes when we see young players, we assume that naturally, maybe Ross Barkley's a good example. When you see him when he was 19, 20, you assume he's going to keep going at the same rate, but sometimes it doesn't work like that. But I think Alli has got all the ingredients that would suggest he really can go to another level.
14 points ahead of Arsenal now, Spurs. I mean, that win was such a stamp of authority on that top four. They're comfortably the second best team in the country. Good shout for title winners next season. I mean, it seems like it's just out of reach. Chelsea are just too strong this season. But the rate they're improving at, I mean, they're well on course for their record points tally. It's already their fourth highest points tally in Premier League era with 7 games to go. Title winners next season? I mean, they don't seem to be slowing down. They're not getting any older.
No, I don't think so. And that's no slight on their quality or Pochettino's quality. I think they're in quite a unique position in the thing that Pochettino demands from his players is kind of this work rate, this sense of personality to their play, the togetherness as a team. It's not really something you can just like upgrade and reinforce in the transfer market. In fact, there's plenty of examples throughout the history of football that buying players into that kind of situation can actually kind of dilute the qualities of a unit like
that. But there's an argument if they'd had a better backup striker to Vincent Janssen, they'd probably be very, very, much closer to Chelsea than they are.
Or you look at what happened with Son Heung-min, who in his second season at Spurs has become the player they thought they were signing the first season. So maybe Vincent Janssen will be that player next season. This is kind of what I'm trying to say. Like, as in, you give Pochettino the tools and give him the time and he'll make it happen. I'm not saying Spurs won't win a title. I actually think Pochettino, if he stays there long term, will win loads with Spurs. But I think next season for them, it's the focus should be on keeping their position in the top four and getting into knockout stages of the Champions League and actually owning that competition.
I think Spurs, when we talk about title winners next season, you often instinctively kind of look at the Manchester clubs. You'll think they're going to spend big again. Chelsea obviously set the bar this season, but there's an argument that Tottenham's kind of stability and the fact they know what they're doing, they've got a very tight-knit group who shouldn't be many sales in the summer. They've benefited from that this season in the sense that other clubs have been kind of more of a flux, more changes, and I think they could benefit from that next year as well. They're the most kind of solid and consistent. Chelsea, they've got the unknown consistency of the Champions League next year, which we don't know how they'll react to that. Whereas Tottenham, I think they're the ones you can maybe make the argument that they're the most kind of stable and set up to to have sustained success. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they were to win it next year.
It'd be
year.
Weird if they won a title at Wembley. That'd be really, really odd.
That
it?
Is actually a good point, because their record at White Hart Lane this year is amazing, but obviously they couldn't translate that to Wembley in Europe. So
you
that
said
is a problem.
They're the second best team in the country. At home, I would say they are the best team in the Premier League. At home, they are just incredible.
Yeah.
But then we saw what happened with West Ham last season, in their last season at the Berlin Ground. I'm not saying there's too many comparables there, but they've moved to the London Stadium and they've lost that edge, so it's something to worry about. Definitely
a psychological element there. Bournemouth 1, Chelsea 3. A great game, this. Bournemouth created 10 chances, Chelsea 11. Chelsea just so professional in shutting these games down, Greg. I mean, we've seen it time after time this season that they're not that much better than the team they're facing, but the system that Conte has in place and the way the players observe it, just see them through those tricky 15-minute periods when they're under pressure, and then they go off and grab a couple of goals, and it's good night Vienna.
I don't know if they are just a bit better. I think they're much better. The difference between Chelsea and so many other sides is we're in this like period of football where we expect big sides to just camp out in the opposition's half at all times. Chelsea are confident in their structure and their defenders enough that they'll let you come at them. And then they'll come back at you. Mm-hmm. So the idea of like they kind of cede the initiative to some sides at times, just to give themselves a rest, I think, sometimes. I don't think they've kind of got the balance in their team to be able to attack, defend, do whatever you want. So, I mean, we talk about, Spurs have got the stability to do well next season. I know we said this about Jose Mourinho, but Antonio Conte is a much, much more kind of a resourceful, sustainable manager than Mourinho. And I honestly, you look at this team, with the right additions, they're going to dominate the league, I think. They've got the right mindset, they've got the quality. Everything's just there for them. They're just a terrifying, terrifying team.
Agree with that, Greg? I mean, Greg touched on it there. There's a good point that Antonio Conte's side, this Chelsea side seem to be able to play four or five different ways. They can play the counter-attack. They can play the low block for 20 minutes comfortably. They can press high. They can dominate the ball. It's kind of odd to see a team to be able to play so many different ways. In the Premier League, we're so used to a team, you know what you're going to get. But with Antonio Conte, you don't really know exactly how they're going to approach the game, and they can pick you off in so many different ways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're just really well coached. I think they know exactly what they're going to do in each scenario, depending on the opposition or the state of the game. We saw the midweek round last week against Man City, where it was almost divided into the half. So the first half was very kind of, they pushed forward, they tried to put City on the back foot. Second half, they realised they might be in a bit of trouble kind of defensively when City are chasing it, so they just kind of shut that game down. And it is the results against teams like Bournemouth that they have been so consistent in. That's why they're going to win the league, not necessarily against the bigger teams. So, yeah, it's an amazing record they've got against those smaller sides, and it's what's going to fire them to the title.
Diego Costa now, four games, in the Premier League without a goal. That's his longest drought in his Chelsea career. It's not exactly a drought as such, but he's looked awful recently, just unable to put any sort of convincing performance in. Is he gone in the summer? I mean, there's reports of tunnel bust-ups with Antonio Conte, and there's, you know, reports of him, you know, being a bit sort of imbalance, but will Chelsea want to keep Costa? Are they already lining up a replacement? There's rumours of Lukaku, of various other players.
There's a lot of noise around, isn't there, which makes you think it wouldn't be that surprising if he did leave. I think Morata's another one who's been linked. Conte worked with him at Juventus, so it's a tough one for Chelsea, because he is a good player. He's obviously going through this drought now, but he's proven in the Premier League that he can do it. But he often brings a lot of baggage with him as well, and we saw the China move in January, and the upset and the caused ahead of a big game at Leicester. Yeah, I wouldn't be that surprised if he left last summer. There was links with Atletico. I don't know whether that will happen again, but there's going to be suitors for him. And yeah, I think Conte wouldn't be too disappointed if he could get in his own man up front to replace him.
Bournemouth looking safe now, but they've got games coming up against teams that have a lot to play for, namely Spurs, Middlesbrough, Burnley, so it could still be a bit awkward for them, but they look relatively, they look like they're going to be okay.
Yeah, I think them and Burnley, they're just kind of going to have enough, really. I wouldn't worry about either of those two. It's the Hulls, the Middlesbroughs, the Swanseas of this world
they're in
that
trouble.
We've got to be concerned about, yeah.
Josh King looks good, though.
He does look very good, yeah. Yeah. The big worry for me with Bournemouth was them losing Callum Wilson, because he's like their discount bargain store brand version of Robert Lewandowski, isn't he? So without him, he kind of we talked about Zlatan and how important he is to how Man United play. And Callum Wilson, he does so much for Bournemouth inside the box. I think when he got injured, we looked at the stats, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but in terms of like the amount of shots and the amount of passes and amount of things inside the box, like he's the only one doing anything for Bournemouth. Like he was like the keystone of how they play. So losing him and kind of Eddie Howe shuffling his pack to put the focus back onto players like Josh King and Afobe as well.
Afobe and King seem to be good foils for each other.
Yeah, and you've got to credit Howe for that as well, I think, because Bournemouth, more so than many other teams in the league, are so based on their system. It's very, very rarely individual quality alone that wins and changes games for them. So, yeah, good on King, good on Howe.
Meanwhile, in Manchester, Man City 3, Hull City 1, a fairly regulation win for Pep's men. David Silva was magnificent, completed 90% of his passes and created 3 chances. Pep revealed this weekend, weirdly, that he wanted to sign David Silva, but it was too much dinero, too much dollar.
Too much Robert De Niro.
You can imagine a midfield of Xavi, Iniesta and David Silva with Busquets in there. That'd have been tasty.
It would have done, but it didn't work when they had Fabregas, did they? Mm. Maybe there's an argument that you can have too much of a good thing. Maybe you look at the
too much possession.
Well, you look at what happened when Rakitic came in under Enrique. It was a little bit of a different note to the stew, and it brought all the flavors back out again in the best way possible. But being serious, I think David Silva is an extremely Pep Guardiola-esque player, and I think people talk about how City prepared for Guardiola's arrival for years. I mean, I think David Silva, above anything else, is the perfect example that they were going, we'll get Pep in 3 years, let's just get him in, set the tone, and we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah,
shame they didn't do that with some of the fullbacks and places like that, I guess. But
yeah. Very good point. City still looking a bit wobbly, especially Claudio Bravo.
He's the most playmaking goalkeeper in the world, apparently, according to Pep Guardiola.
I mean, he was at the heart of a fantastic goal.
The build-up for that goal is the first time I've seen City actually play in the way that Bayern Munich did under Pep, which is where they basically, we're just going to pass in our own defensive third like we would in the attacking third, and we're not going to care that the defenders are chasing down our defenders. It was really impressive.
It was actually amazing.
It was really good. But I mean, then again, it was only against Hull. No offence to Hull. But
Claudio Bravo can't save any shots straight at him. The Manchester derby on the 27th is basically, Greg, looking like the one that's going to decide top four bragging rights between United and City. They're so close together now.
Yeah, definitely. What a game to potentially decide it as well, Manchester derby. I wouldn't be surprised Mourinho kind of goes there. We saw Chelsea went to Liverpool a few years ago and kind of ended their title hopes with a kind of in the middle of European games. He still had lots of other things to think about and just kind of shut the game down. And at the Etihad, I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to attempt something similar to that. So it could be a really interesting game that. And yeah, as you say, the winner would probably be favourites to get in there ahead of the other.
I was at their match against Chelsea actually in the FA Cup when he set up in this kind of back six formation.
They were good in that game.
They were. And what's weird about this is, I mean, as people know, I have been quite critical of Mourinho and his tactics at times. He's quite negative and all the rest of it. And he was negative against Liverpool, but maybe it had to be. What was interesting at Chelsea, even though he was playing like this back six, it was almost set up to break. Like you could see it was a back six, and a positive back six, if such a thing could possibly.
Positive back six.
Exactly. He was kind of playing with an idea that we're going to get at Chelsea. It didn't work, and they spent too much time kicking Hazard. But it'll be interesting to see how he approaches Guardiola, because Guardiola is now regularly fielding like 5 attackers when they have the ball. Like that's how they shift their shape. And yeah, how United respond to that is going to be fascinating, because I'm not sure they'll be able to.
And also, the first time they met this season, it was pretty one-sided in City's favour. Hull have games versus Sunderland and Crystal Palace coming up, Mr. Lee. Would it be the best managerial achievement of the season for Marco Silva to actually pull this off and for Hull to stay up? Because you look at the squad and, I mean, it's slim pickings, even compared to the other relegation sort of threatened teams, isn't it?
Yeah, I still think Conte, if he wins the lead as dominant as they are now, if they continue, I think that probably would be the achievement of the season. But Silva, very close second. Because Hull, they just didn't do any recruitment last summer, did they? Until the final day. They almost weakened the squad somehow, despite getting promoted. So he had all that to deal with in January in terms of bringing new players in to kind of mould them into a side which was ready to pick up points immediately. It's really impressive, and their home record is amazing. So if they can win all their home games remaining, I'm not sure exactly their fixtures at home, but that would give them a great chance, and they've got everything to play for.
Yeah. If there's any justice in the world, obviously Conte is going to win the title.
Yeah,
I'm really hoping that Klopp and Pochettino get top four. Pochettino is going to get top four.
Right.
And that Silva gets survival, because then you've got 4 managers that have shown just how impressive coaching can be on their sides this season. And I think that's kind of a great example to set to the Premier League, which has got all the money in the world and rarely has the sense to know how to use it properly. So fingers crossed.
I think just quickly on Silva, the LMA Manager of the Year award, I think that there's some criteria which is slightly different. And I remember Tony Pulis won it when he kept Palace up. Similar position, really. He did come in earlier than Silva, but everyone thought they were doomed, and he kind of led them comfortably to safety. So maybe Silva will get some sort of recognition, formal recognition, if he can do that.
Would be deserved. Everton 4, Leicester City 2, unbelievable game. Lukaku with another brace, another thrilling win. Are Everton the most entertaining team in the league?
No, but they're very good.
Yeah?
So, yeah, especially
who's the
home.
Most entertaining team in the league?
I think Chelsea are up there for me. I find them so satisfying to watch. Just again, like I was saying earlier, the way they can attack and defend, I think the kind of ability of teams to sit back and soak up pressure and then hit you back is so underrated. And it's kind of a bit of a lost art these days when we're so obsessed, as I say, with camping out in the opposition's half.
But they are fun to watch.
They are very fun to watch, yeah. And it's really great that Koeman is so happy to give such a great striker as Romelu Lukaku a platform to just basically be a classic centre forward, and it's wonderful. He is wonderful to watch. He's one of my most
brilliant,
entertaining players watching the league, I'd say. Definitely.
There's a lot of questions about his work rate, which seem to pop up every week, even though he scores a brace. Are they justified? I mean, from a casual observer's point of view, I don't really buy it, but it'd be good to get a more expert opinion.
Well, Greg, don't come to me then. no, I'm kind of with you, Nick. I do find it a bit strange because he scores goals. He scores so many goals, and that's his job almost. I know it's a bit simplistic to say that, but I think you obviously will have to provide a lot more kind of hard running if you're not providing the same amount of goals. Roberto Firmino, I think, is perfect for Klopp's system. He's not going to get the same amount of goals as Lukaku does, but he offers a lot with that kind of movement and that non-stop pressing from the front. Lukaku, his job is to put the ball in the net, and if Everton, as they have done this season, are able to provide the right service, he guarantees that. So I do find it a bit puzzling that this gets pulled up every time he kind of plays a match, especially when, as you say, he scored 2-3 goals in it.
I think his numbers, he's actually covering less ground per game this season than he has before, but that shouldn't be held against him. I mean, the classic example is Romario at Barcelona.
Yeah.
When he was being coached by Cruyff compared to Van Gaal was like, oh, you got to be in there defending from the front, doing everything. Cruyff was like, save yourself, run less and keep your energy and your focus when the ball comes to you in pockets of space, in the final for to score goals. And I mean, if that's good enough for Johan Cruyff, then I mean, I don't really think it shows the players lazy. It's more that they're intelligent and they're using their energy in an efficient and effective manner. And looking at how many goals he scored this season, you can't really complain.
I'll argue with that. One player there's no question marks about his work rate is Tom Davies, who's been liberated by the signing of Morgan Schneidlin, who's come in and just said, don't worry about this, guys, I'll shore it up at the back, you go run on a bit. So
a bit more than a bit in Davis's case.
A bit more than
it?
A bit. He's wonderful to watch, striding forward, golden locks. He looks like a sort of a young Dulux puppy, just sort of flowing across the pitch, doesn't he?
With his socks down as well.
Yeah, proper old school footballer. Greg's doing lots of nodding. Yeah.
Just satisfied with the observations that are being offered on young Tom Davis. No, I think he's great, yeah, but he's... Is he going to run himself into the ground? He needs to show he's got a bit more to him, doesn't he really?
He's definitely going to run himself into the ground.
Otherwise, he's just going to be another one of those like young English players that burst onto the scene, bomb around a bit, and we go, oh, he's brilliant. Yeah. And then in 5 years' time, we go, oh, he's rubbish, isn't he? He's got nothing to his game. Like, we just you know, let's let the guy blossom rather than burning him out.
Let him run free. Yeah. Everton level with Arsenal, Greg, but Gunners have 3 games in hand. Seventh as
they
far
all win
as...
them though, haven't they? That's you know.
Well, we'll find out. Is seventh as far as they can go?
Yeah, I think this season it is. Obviously, longer term they'll be looking to break into that big six as it's become. But yeah, seventh this year is, and they're going to get that, aren't they? They're comfortably ahead of West Brom, who seem to be kind of going in the other direction. So. Yeah. That's a good season for Everton.
Yeah, very good season. Hang on. Leicester have lost a game before a big Champions League tie. This is awfully suspicious. They travel to the... This is mental. They travel to the Vicente Calderon for their UEFA Champions League quarterfinal first leg versus Atletico Madrid, who had to deal with a Madrid derby, Real Madrid, on the weekend.
And they'll be the only team in this tie with a league title to their name. Currently. That's mental.
It's Craig Shakespeare versus Diego Simeone. It's Diego Godin versus Jamie Vardy. What do you say at this point about this? I mean, it's the journey. You know, what's the feeling about the game?
Well, it seems weird that a few months ago we would have said, oh, Leicester have lost Wes Morgan and that's going to be a benefit because he's rubbish.
Yeah.
But actually, he was pretty good in the Champions League in the last round.
He looked like a titan.
He did. He looked like the titan he was last season. Yeah. And yeah, he's not going to make it now. And he is... It's a magic spell, isn't it, what Leicester have got when they're actually good? And I kind of feel like you're taking one of the runes from their magic stone circle of power, which they have at the back and all over the pitch in Wes Morgan. He is a conduit of their kind of bravado and chemistry. So I wonder how that's going to affect them, because they don't really have replacements. They didn't sign any decent centre-backs in the summer, did they?
They've got Vasilewski, haven't they?
Yeah, but he's rubbish. He's not great. A UFC fighter who's stumbled onto a football pitch and gone, why am I here?
He's very, very strong.
I've only ever seen him foul people.
He's good at that.
And he's in the Champions League. You don't get to foul people in the Champions League.
Yeah. I mean, Greg, we thought that Sevilla would batter Leicester, and in the first leg they did, but they didn't get enough goals, and then they got turned over at the King Power. Surely Atletico Madrid are going to... I mean, they're a really good team with really good players. Surely the Leicester can't make it happen again.
Surely not, but logic kind of goes out the window with Leicester, doesn't it? I think when this draw was made, I thought it was a bad draw for Leicester just because Atletico are basically a better version of them, aren't they? They kind of sit deep, just make things really difficult, hit people on the break. But then on the other hand, Atletico probably in the home leg won't blow Leicester away as some of the other teams can do. So I don't think Leicester will be going back to the King Power kind of 5-0 down.
Yeah.
I think Simeone, if he gets a one-goal lead, 2-0, something like that, which is still a great result for Atletico, that'll kind of be it. I don't see it being a real kind of high goal thrashing. So that means they'll probably be in with a small chance going back to the King Power, which is quite ridiculous.
Yeah.
It all hinges on Ndidi, the Nigerian Luka Modric. Yeah. So we'll have to see what happens there.
We'll have to see what happens there. Atletico Madrid, by the way, did some unreal defending, and Jan Oblak pulled off some unreal saves.
Yeah, did you see Stefan Savic's goal line clearance?
Incredible. Absolutely
it was
incredible.
A poor match, though. I mean, I covered it for Scorker. I was,
Yeah, I heard it was a bit...
Yeah, I wasn't impressed. I was expecting more.
I just saw the highlights.
Maybe they were saving themselves to take on the Foxes of England.
Yeah, hope so. Mm. In the other games, we'll cover those quickly. West Ham beat Swansea to yank themselves away from relegation trouble. That's probably them safe. Swansea, less so. Saints beat West Brom 1-0 in the biggest dead rubber in Premier League history. And Middlesbrough drew 0-0 for the 8th time this season versus Burnley. That was the end of the rest of the Premier League results this season. One game left this weekend.
Ooh.
One game left. Crystal Palace versus Arsenal. Massive game for both clubs for very different reasons. The obvious thing to note is there's a bit of an omen issue for Crystal Palace and Big Sam.
A devil child?
Crystal Palace have only beaten Arsenal once in Premier League history. That was back in 1994. And Big Sam's record versus Wenger is abysmal. He's played 32, lost 20. Mm. So he's only won 4. So the form book would suggest, Greg, that it's going to be a comfortable Arsenal win. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Arsenal and Wenger's style of football is really suited to taking on certain managers, and I think Big Sam Allardyce is one of those managers. It's just the kind of, you're just going to do your pragmatic thing, we're just going to play art, and you can't deal with art, so have a gallery.
Enjoy this installation.
Yeah.
Greg, the interesting story will be the one thing that Wenger's never really figured out this season is what to do up front. And there's the option of playing Giroud versus Mamadou Sakho. Sakho's been Crystal Palace's in-form player all season. You imagine that he might be tempted to play Giroud, A, because he knows Sakho very, very well. They play together for the French national team.
Scott Dan's out as well.
Scott Dan is out. Mm-hmm. So it might just be a good way of just keeping Sakho busy. Or do you reckon he should go in a different direction up top?
No, I would go with Giroud, I think, whose minutes per goal ratio this season is really good, isn't it? I know most of those have come off the bench, and he's kind of had to flit in and out a little bit with Sanchez up front, and Welbeck's been the man highest up the pitch for Arsenal recently, but I would go with Giroud. He's also got a great record against Palace. He seems to score every single time they play, so I think Giroud could be the man to, as you say, occupy Saka. And Saka's actually really important for Palace, both defensively and in terms of what he's brought with the ball at his feet. He kind of, rather than hacking it clear like players like Damien Delaney have tended to do.
He's an incredible passer of the ball, Saka, but he always looks really awkward.
That's the problem, yeah.
His technique is really odd, but he's brilliant at it.
I think if you see him once for the first time, you think he's really bad on the ball just because of how he looks, and you're not used to someone. John Stones, for example, has all the kind of the style, doesn't he? And he kind of, when he passes the ball, you can tell he's good at it because of the kind of shape he kicks it and stuff like that. Saka's the opposite, but uses it really well and kind of plays it into midfield, which has helped Palace going forward as well as at the back.
Like a video game with good gameplay but bad graphics. Yes. Basically, Mamadou Sakho.
That's Mamadou Sakho. I like that. That's that's a good observation.
Thanks.
Let's talk about the Champions League, because oh my word, some of these games are just... We always say it every year, but the Champions League, like, it's just so good to like throw up these games. But this year especially, the massive, massive ties. And the first one is that we'll focus on is Juve versus Barcelona. A lot of people are saying, and I think you're included in this, Mr. Greg Johnson, is this is Juve's year for the Champions League.
I'm fluttering my eyebrows.
Yeah, he's fluttering his eyebrows. Barca nowhere near the force they were like even like last season, a couple of seasons ago. But MSN can rip apart anyone on their day. Although Juve have probably the best defence in Europe on paper. It's going to be a great game, isn't it?
It really is. But Barcelona fluffed their lines at the weekend with Real Madrid.
2-0 lost to Malaga.
Yeah, with Real Madrid drawing, that was their big chance to kind of get back on, kind of take the initiative in the title race, and didn't. So I kind of wonder, I mean, Luis Enrique, he needs to go out with a big finish, I think, because his work at Barcelona will forever be underappreciated by the Guardiolistas, or whatever you want to call them. So I think that they're going to be driven to win this, but it's going to be an absolutely epic tie.
The fact that the first leg is at the Turin Stadium, or is it the Juve Stadium? Sorry.
Yeah, Juve.
The Juve Stadium is even better, because Juventus' home record, Greg, is astonishing since they've moved there, even in European competition. So it could just be a 1-0 result for Juve that goes to the Nou Camp. Do you see it going that way, or do you see Barca getting that crucial away goal? How do you reckon the sort of flow of the game will be? Will it be all-out attack from Barca, or...?
No, I don't think so. And partly I think that'll be because they won't be able to. Juventus obviously very solid at the back, but they've got plenty of quality going forward as well. And Allegri's kind of in the last few months found a way to fit all of his attacking players basically into a system that kind of works in Serie A at least. So Barca will be given plenty to think about at the other end. And I think with this formation they're playing at the moment, the kind of three thing that they've got going on, it has left them vulnerable in La Liga kind of to quick breaks and kind of when the ball is switched over, particularly in wide areas. So someone like Allegri will definitely have noticed that and set his team up to do that. But I think Juve do need to get kind of a win under their belts if they are to progress in the home leg, because going to the Camp now with kind of chasing a deficit is not where you want to be.
Yeah, Higuain's movement versus Jeremy Mathieu's lack thereof is a pretty terrifying prospect for Barcelona fans, isn't it?
It's kind of wonderful seeing a throwback player up against such like a modern kind of sophisticated team as Barcelona playing like such an outlandish system as they do. I think it's going to be great to watch. Yeah. A nice clash of styles.
Yeah, cool. And we get to see some tears from Bonucci and Chiellini if they get a good result, which is always good fun. Mm. Italian footballers crying is one of the reasons we watch the game.
It's what we're here for, isn't it?
It's what we're here for. We want Italian men to cry right now. Bayern Munich versus Real Madrid. Woof. Two of the biggest teams in European history here. Trying to ignore all that's been and gone and like all their history and like when they've met each other. What can we expect on the pitch? Would you expect sort of Zidane to go, right, let's just defend this and then try and get some set pieces, some corners and play on the break? Do you expect Bayern Munich sort of dominate the ball? What do you expect from this game?
I expect old men doing wonderful things in Ribery, Robben, Xavi Alonso, and all the rest of these veterans for
really?
Bayern Munich.
Okay.
I think that their experience, they showed it against Dortmund at the weekend when they beat them 4-1. They just, you know, when you sometimes see a team who are like this, okay, they've won the Champions League before, but like this is like their last peak years as footballers. If Juventus, I've said Juventus, but like Bayern Munich under Carlo Ancelotti, who seems to be bringing all his players up to form at the perfect part of the season. Okay, they lost against Hoffenheim, but that's because Thiago Alcantara was missing. He's not going to be missing for this, and I just think they're a much more cohesive team than Real Madrid. And I think Zidane is underrated. He might not be a tactical master in the way that some people demand him to be in an age of Pep Guardiola and all the rest of it, but he's even so. I just think, if you put their strongest 11s together, I just think that Bayern Munich are a side that can find more solutions, even in their own kind of abilities together on the pitch, than Real Madrid can.
But Greg, it's been a case of Real Madrid's mentality more than anything all season. They just seem to be able to get goals from unbelievable positions. They played very well against Atletico Madrid. They really made life difficult for them. They could have won that game quite easily had it not been for the aforementioned Stefan Savic and Jan Oblak. Who are the players that we're most looking forward to seeing? The obvious name everyone's talking about is Thiago Alcantara, who's been unbelievable all season, especially since the turn of the year. He's the main reason that Bayern Munich have got a 10-point gap on their rivals.
Most interceptions as well, not just a creator. He's been everything.
Creator and destroyer there of worlds. Anybody else that we should be keeping an eye on during the game who might be the real game changer? There's a lot of big players, but who would be the game changer in your eyes?
It could be anyone, couldn't it? Real Madrid, Bayern are probably better to watch. They'll probably have lots of the ball. They'll be maybe more eye-catching. But in terms of like a moment to change the game or the tie, Madrid have got plenty of their own as well. Ronaldo, obviously, I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's pretty good. I think Madrid will be more about kind of moments for them, and maybe if they can get a goal. They've got to be kind of clinical, I think, with their chances, particularly in the away leg, to get through. But Thiago is definitely the one who your eyes are drawn to. But Casemiro has actually been really good this season,
Excellent player. In
the last few weeks. And when he kind of came into the team last year, it was often kind of... It was a bit like when Coquelin came into Arsenal's team at first, not necessarily comparing the two, but it's like someone who can actually play that role, and he seems kind of very good at it, but you don't know whether it's really because he is a good player or is it because his role is basically just to hold and sit there. But I think it is obviously the former now, and he's really shone this season, and he'll be looking to get to grips with Thiago and keep him quiet.
What was really odd at the weekend in the Madrid derby is that Casemiro played, but Atletico Madrid got their equaliser by, I mean, usually you'd think a defensive midfielder in his role would sit between the midfield and the defence, but there was almost a space between Casemiro and the defence, which Angel Correa dropped into to find the free ball for Antoine Griezmann. And, I mean, you can upgrade the players there and have Thiago Alcantara dancing around the back of Casemiro to slot through a ball to Robert Lewandowski, who is probably the best striker in Europe at the moment. Like, the guy is ridiculous. He scored a free kick and a penalty at the weekend, so he's not just a guy who can do things from open play. We talk about Madrid's threat from set pieces. Lewandowski can hurt you in any way you want, really. So, yeah, I'm again, another tie which can go either way. So much talent, but I really do think Bayern can do some serious damage to Real Madrid.
Interesting to see if Karim Benzema starts as well. The last tie of the three, this is the connoisseur's choice. Borussia Dortmund versus Monaco. Two teams that will absolutely refuse to be defensive in this game, Greg. Monaco lead Ligue 1, rather, but Dortmund are well off the pace in Bundesliga, so they're just going to go all in. This could be the highest scoring two-legged Champions League tie of all time,
yeah,
couldn't it?
Definitely.
Because Dortmund are even more reckless than Man City, aren't they, in terms of going forward? So it could be ridiculous.
Yeah, and if you think of some of the young players on show, I know that we're kind of getting onto that maybe in a minute, but...
Go for it now.
But it does kind of contribute, I think, to that kind of abandon that there is. There's kind of like not inhibited these players, are they, as we've seen all season on both sides. And I don't think either of them are good enough to kind of try and sit back and hold a lead. Their strength is very much going forward. So it could be really end-to-end throughout the kind of 180 minutes or maybe even more if we get them, if we're lucky. Yeah, I don't even want to predict how many goals there'll be, but it's going to be a crazy game and probably the one I'm most looking forward to just because... Two teams, obviously Dortmund have got to this stage before, but they're very much kind of a different team this year. Lots of different players in there. Monaco, we're not really used to seeing them at this stage of the competition. So it's good to have that variety, I think, with this tie. We've got some of the big guns going head-to-head, Bayern, Real, Juve, Barca, but it's good to get kind of two teams up against each other who not really used to being at this stage with the players that they've got at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much young talent on display. Greg touched on it briefly. Weigl, Dembele, Mbappe, Lamar, that's just four names could have had.
Rafael Guerrero scored an absolute screamer against Bayern Munich at the weekend.
There's just so many incredible young talent. I mean, and they all got something to prove and they all just love playing attacking football. It's going to be a great game to watch. But who do you reckon they're actually going to be the team with the pedigree to actually get the result?
Monaco, 100%. Purely because you look at, I mean, Dortmund have probably got the most potential of any club in Europe, but they're kind of in the position Monaco were maybe a year, 2 years ago. Tuchel isn't like Jardim, though. He's not kind of going, we'll play a more kind of cautious way to build this kind of build our strength and blossom in 2 years' time. Tuchel's decided we're just going to try and be the best team in the world right now, and they're not quite. They haven't quite got the experience. They haven't quite got the consistency to do that. When they do pull it off, it's fantastic. So I'm not saying that Dortmund can't win this. Mm-hmm. If they do produce two of their best performances of the season, and they can peak very high, they could blow Monaco away. But I just think Monaco, there's the, if you compare the two clubs like projects, I know some people hate that word in modern football, but you compare them to projects, Monaco a bit further along the road. And I think that they've shown this season by, I mean, how many goals have they scored in
88 in Liga.
88 goals, ridiculous. And that only really comes down to not just talent, but consistency and the kind of coherency of having a side that they work together. You can actually name their first 11 very easily because they're solid, they're playing the same lineup more or less every week. They're just a great side.
Well, they'll be missing Sidibe, though, who's got appendicitis.
Oh, dear.
Which is an unusual football injury to have.
A big loss, though, because he's been really impressive in there.
He's been fantastic. Yeah.
They're just so quick, Monaco, which is what I noticed. Yeah, just across the pitch, kind of off the ball when they're closing teams down against City. They're just so rapid all over the pitch and very kind of vibrant, that young team that you expect.
And again, that's not just down to having quick legs. That's a lack of hesitancy that comes with playing the same way with similar players week in, week out. Exactly. And it's just they've got experience in the right places. They've got just incredible emerging players in all over the place. I think they've got the right mix, whereas Dortmund's mix is still to be refined.
Okay. Well, Dortmund have a very good record in the Champions League knockout stages of late, so we will see what happens. That's all we've got time to talk about this week, which is very sad. Thanks very much to Greg Johnson.
No problem. Thank you, Nick.
And thanks very much to Greg Lee, freelancer for The National. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And thanks very much to you listeners for obviously listening. Please subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, and we'll be back very, very soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. This episode of the Squawker Talker was brought to you by PlayZula, a new way to bet on football based on judgment rather than odds. Visit po.st/playzulapod or click the link in the description to sign up now and receive an instant £5 bonus on your first deposit of £5.